back with Teacher Talk, sponsored by the Columbus Education Association, who is solely responsible for the views expressed. I'm Sue Miziak, your host. On Teacher Talk tonight, we'll be speaking with Mark Reel, president of KidsOhio.org, an online resource center for policymakers, educators, parents, and community groups interested in improving education in Ohio. We'll discuss some of the hot topics which impact teachers and students, not only in the Columbus City schools, but also in the rest of the state. Mark has been a frequent guest on this program, and I really want to welcome him back to Teacher Talk.
Thank you, Sue.
Good to see you again, Mark. Now, it seems like once a year we get together to either look back at what's happened during the school year, or we look forward to upcoming issues or events which will impact the future. So today, actually, Mark, we're going to do a little bit of both. Before we get to that, though, could you give me an overview of KidsOhio.org, its history, its mission?
Well, we're beginning our 13th year of work. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan research and policy organization, and our mission is to improve the lives and education of Ohio children with a special focus on disadvantaged children. Most of our work is in helping public schools improve.
Right. And because you are pretty much of a, the view of most people is that you're an online organization quite a bit, or we get a lot of our information from you from your online site. How do you help to do this rather large job to help improve education, especially for disadvantaged youth?
Well, for example, we just developed a report on third grade reading. As you
right.
know, this new state law, third graders have to pass a state reading test in order to be promoted to fourth grade. We did a 12-page report, worked very closely with the district, provide information on each of the district's 74 schools, but we also then provided information on 39 public charter schools, because there are 1,400 children in those third graders in those schools. There's 4,100 in Columbus schools. So you've got 5,500 Columbus children directly affected by this new law. And we also were able to profile the work of five reading coaches in Columbus schools, led by a woman by the name of Sandy Donald, who's a former principal at Avalon, very high energy and really a concerted effort in terms of the district. And we also profiled a teacher in a nonprofit charter school, the Graham Primary School, in their issues, working with children to help them pass the test. And so we've gotten a lot of very positive response. There was an editorial in the Columbus Dispatch. There was a forum in the at the Columbus Metropolitan Club. The library is an important ally. And so I think what we're trying to do is profile this community-wide effort to help 8, 9, and 10-year-olds read at grade level by the time they're in third grade.
You know, Mark, I saw a lot of references to this report, and I know that some individuals out there might be very interested in seeing this and reading the profiles about the about Sandy Donald and also about the charter school principal. And so people can go to your website and see that report, kidsohio.org. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, and it's free. There's no charge. And or if you prefer, you can call us or email us, and we'll mail you a copy.
Wow, that's wonderful. Now, how are you funded, Mark? KidsOhio.org, as you said, has been around for 13 years. You've really, really been an active member of what's going on in education, especially in Columbus, but throughout the state as well. So where do you get your funding, or who are your partners?
It's all private. We don't accept any money from the school district or from any public funds. That way we can be an independent organization. And we're supported primarily by employer organizations. So Limited Brands, Huntington, Chase, Nationwide. So those employer organizations are very concerned about the quality of the workforce, and they also want accurate, independent, accurate information about what's going on in the schools. And so we're fortunate we've been able to be an independent voice, providing information to the community at large.
You know, it's very interesting when you mention all these different partners, such as Limited Brands, and that I started doing this program back in 1987, and the community was just starting at that time to get involved with the public schools. They really weren't, a real force in our district. And now we see that, how they say it takes a village to raise a child. Mm-hmm. Well, I really do think that the whole business village of Columbus has really become involved in education, and I think that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. I really do. Well, now, Mark, the topics I'd like us to address today include this past year in the Columbus City Schools, because we have seen a whole slew of issues and events that have impacted our district, including the defeat of the levy and what that means to our district, because I know we're already feeling an impact from that. I'd also like us to look at the role of charter schools and their impact. You've already brought up the fact that we have many charter schools, and I know that in reading part of your report, certainly there was a real a close look at how effective the charter schools are in relation to, or in comparison to, maybe even the public schools. And I'd like to hear about your views about Mayor Coleman's appointment of an education czar, and then, of course, anything else you want to bring to the mix. So let's start out first of all talking about the defeat of the levy and what it means to Columbus City Schools, because that although we knew that there was strong opposition by certain parties to this levy, we also know that it was something that was greatly needed.
Right. This was the first defeat of a levy since 1990. Columbus has had an unusual level of community support. And I think that, the voters felt that they that there needed to be changes. There's still a lot of uncertainty out there. The auditor's report had not been issued at that point in terms of the data changes. And there are also cases pending against individuals. So I think that created an air of uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is not a rejection of the school district. It was a rejection of the plan that was put forward in terms of some people would say the lack of a plan. There are people who wanted more detail. But I think to the credit of the district's proceeded. They've had to make some tough decisions, closing several schools, as you know.
Right.
I attended all of those hearings. It's a painful decision for everybody involved, but I think a necessary one, particularly in some of these schools were very under-enrolled. I think the good news is that there's, I think, strong support in the community for the new superintendent.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second, Mark. Yes, I believe that there is strong support for Dr. Dan Good. And so what's your take on this? Dr. Good started out here as kind of a person who was going to come in and start to help straighten things out as an interim superintendent. Mm-hmm. And then within 6 months or so, he was offered the position of superintendent. So how do you view this? How do you view his work so far? His impact on the district?
Well, I think people are hungry for leadership. And yes. I think that he's a positive leader. He'd been a superintendent in Worcester. He'd been a superintendent in Westerville. Westerville, the third of youngsters are low income. Another third are racial minorities or ethnic minorities. So he came here with experience. We're dealing with some of the issues that Columbus has. And I think his style has, what's impressed me is that teachers and principals have responded very positively to
mm-hmm,
him.
They have.
And I think in addition, the larger business community and community leaders, it's a very challenging job because of the uncertainties. But I think that, a good example would be the effort to improve third grade reading.
Mm-hmm.
This, I think, has really taken on real passion in the district. You know, bus drivers are involved. Cafeteria workers are involved.
How are bus drivers involved? I wasn't aware of that.
Well, there's a program called Books on the Bus. So that they've collected books. They've asked the community to donate books.
Uh-huh.
And then when children get on the bus, they can take a book and read. Not surprisingly, bus drivers like it because they think the buses are quieter.
A little quieter, less rowdy.
But it's also, it's a way that highly productive people use their time.
That's
true. You know, if you ride a commuter, if you ride a bus to downtown, you'll see a lot of business people reading.
Sure.
You know, and I think that we want our youngsters to be able to do the same thing. So I think that common sense of purpose has been really impressive. I chaired a panel at the Columbus Metropolitan Club where Sandy Donald spoke about what the district was doing, and Allison Circle spoke about what the library is doing. There was a very warm response, even acknowledging that the problems are significant. I mean, 49% of Columbus City School third graders on the October test could only identify a few words, couldn't really put together sentences. So, know, part of this is we need to help. The good part about the third grade guarantee law that everybody likes is you have to identify youngsters who are kindergarten, first, second grade, and then help them. And obviously, this has not been done to the extent it should, or we wouldn't have 49% entering.
That's right.
So, you know, I think the district, the teachers and are hungry for a sense of common purpose. And I think the third grade reading campaign has achieved that purpose, even knowing that there are going to be significant problems ahead in terms of the number of youngsters who are still are not at grade level.
Well, you know, Mark, it's very interesting that you bring this up, and I'm glad we're talking about the third grade reading guarantee, because I know that in the past I have done a couple of teacher talk programs in which it was brought out by my guests, the great need to look at these kids in kindergarten, first and second grade, as you've mentioned, but also in preschool. Right. And of course, Columbus does have some preschool programs for children, and it really needs to start that young, because if students aren't necessarily getting this support at home, you know, or they may be, but parents work and that, and they really need it from the schools early on. We can't wait until they take that test. So I know that we're trying to provide that support, but I know that a lot of people out there who maybe don't have third graders, but who are very aware of the situation, are saying to themselves, wow, 49% of the kids did not pass it. What happens to those kids? What do they do? Do they stay in third grade? What is the district doing for them? And I'm wondering if you could just respond to that briefly right now.
Sure. Well, the first thing the district is doing is they're focusing on helping youngsters pass the test on May 7th, and then it'll be offered again on July 8th. So there's two additional opportunities. And so I think the district rightfully is helping youngsters prepare for that. It's not a test you can cram for,
right?
Because it's reading passages and writing about what you read or answering questions about what you've read. So I think that's been the first purpose. The second purpose is they are trying, like all the districts in the state, to figure out what to do with youngsters who are retained. And there is a provision in state law where they can be promoted during the school year. And they're still, I think, still trying to set a policy for that.
So if they pass it the following fall, then they can be promoted. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, I think they are more interested in their classroom performance. I think that they're kind of shying away from using the fall test as the marker. You know, and you know, again, these are 8, 9, and 10 year olds. So
right.
So a lot of times in a matter of a couple months, you can see a lot of maturity.
Absolutely.
Growth. So I think, you know, this is part of what we have to convey to people is, you know, these are youngsters who. The other thing we want to do is help these youngsters develop the same love of reading that you have,
right,
and that teachers have and their parents have, so that it's not just a test that they pass that can sound unpleasant, but that they really see that this is their gateway to knowledge, including knowledge on the internet, because if your reading skills are not good, the internet's not very helpful.
No, it isn't, and you can't utilize it, you can't access it, you know, it's totally unavailable to you. So right, I can really see that. Well, now let's move on from the third grade reading guarantee for a moment. We've talked about the fact that we've gained a new superintendent, a levy was defeated. Let's talk about schools being closed. You've already made a reference to that. I think it's something like 7 schools are being closed at this time, and mainly, from my understanding, due to the fact that so many of them were underpopulated. And maybe in some cases, maybe they weren't in the physical shape that we wanted them to be in. So what is your feeling about this, Mark?
Well, as I mentioned, I went to all the hearings,
right,
and they're very passionate. People care deeply,
sure,
about their schools.
Right.
And to the credit of the district, they changed their mind on 2 schools. So Independence High School, for example, will,
right,
remain open. I think the core of the district's case was that you have schools that are significantly under-enrolled and that it's not economically feasible to operate those schools. They're in the process of helping families choose another school for next year. I think one of the good things was, as soon as that decision was made, people from the central office were out at those schools working with the principals.
Wonderful.
You know, and the teachers, because the teachers are concerned too.
They have to reapply
for jobs. I mean, this is not a process that anybody likes, but it is a necessary process in terms of fiscal stability for the district. I think you know, it's also an opportunity, I think, for the district to talk about what kinds of choices are available for youngsters. And I think for some parents, they were pleasantly surprised to find that they had a broader range of choices than they thought.
Great. Well, we hope that we know that it'll all work out eventually in that, but it's sometimes hard going through that whole transitional process. We know that the gifted program seems to be shrinking in our district, and that's of great concern to people. The data scandal, I mean, it's just doesn't seem to be going away. So anything you want to say about either one of those? Those are both kind of negatives.
Well, my understanding is on the gifted that the district has reversed itself so that there's another year to figure out what's the best way to deliver these services. The good news is that you've got a lot of parents who care deeply about what happens to their youngsters.
That's right.
And they made their voices known. So I think that's a positive thing in terms of people who are concerned that parents care about what happens to their children.
And the district listened to the parents.
Right. So that was, and I think that was very positive. I think in terms of the data, at the point where it really matters, which is in the building and at the district level, there's now consensus that, for example, the data I was giving you in terms of third grade reading is clean data.
Right.
Okay. Now, the Ohio Department of Education is looking at what happened in the past. They may regrade some of the past years. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody knows that the Franklin County prosecutor, the city attorney, and the U.S. district attorney are all investigating this. And we're really in their hands about this. But I think at the practitioner level, in terms of where your child is getting education from a teacher, there's now an assurance in the district that the data is clean. And I think this is one of the things that Dr. Good and his new management team, all of whom are people who have been with the district for a while, have really put into order. And I think there is now a confidence inside the district about the fact that the current data is accurate.
Right. And we're glad to hear that at least we're making some progress on this. Well, now, Mark, you've already brought up the topic of charter schools, and they've had a big impact on Columbus City School enrollment, although my understanding is our enrollment actually went up a little bit this year, which is always good news. But a lot of parents like the idea of charter schools because they feel it's an opportunity for choice. And certainly, I think the public schools have tried to respond to this by offering more choice in the public schools. And so maybe that's a good thing. But then we also hear fiscal mismanagement quite often when we hear references to charter schools. And I'm certainly not out to say anything negative about those who are fiscally responsible. And there are many that are doing an excellent job in educating students and offering the kind of choice that parents want. But so we hear of ones like KIPP, for example, Knowledge is Power program seems to be very successful. And then we hear of others that have defrauded the taxpayer dollars is actually what it ends up being of millions of dollars. Could you make a comment about this?
Sure. Well, as you pointed out, there's also a growing number of Columbus children in charter schools, now over 16,000 youngsters, and countywide over 22,000 youngsters in public charter schools. They are public schools. They are subject to the public the audit by the state auditor. The children do have to take the same tests that children do in the Columbus City schools. The demographics of children in charter schools look pretty much the same as the district.
Right.
So high poverty, high numbers of children of color. And you're absolutely right to point out that the state law is way too weak in terms of financial oversight, particularly in terms of schools that are opening. And you know, Columbus is a terrible thing that there were 9 different groups of children who were enrolled for school. You think how a choice of a school, you're leaving a school, then you're joining a school that basically just had to close within 6 weeks. Terrible experience for those youngsters and for their parents.
Something like 17 charter schools closed last year.
Right. I mean, it's there needs to be much tougher financial. You need to be able to demonstrate competence in order to open a school or to open a second or third school, which some of these places were doing. So the good news is there are groups of charter schools that are very committed to high quality and to being collaborative with the Columbus schools, and that would include the KIPP program, the Graham family of schools, the United Schools Network, Arts and College Preparatory. These are all schools that cooperated with the Mayor's Education Commission. They know that a lot of their youngsters are going to be coming from Columbus schools or going back to Columbus schools, and so they want to add value. and they want to be fiscally responsible.
And we want to hear that kind of thing, that's for sure. And I guess then from what you've said, it sounds as if it's up to the state to have greater oversight on the charter schools that are newly opening to make sure that they do have the fiscal responsibility, to make sure that they do have the experience, the background, that they do have a good plan for that particular school so children are not harmed in any way.
Well, and Mayor Coleman now has the legal authority to sponsor charter schools. The mayor of Indianapolis has been doing this for about 10 years.
Wow.
And in contrast to Columbus, almost all of these schools in Indianapolis are A or B rated.
Wow.
Because, well, everyone knows who the mayor is.
Yeah, right.
And so if the school isn't high quality, in fact, in Indianapolis, if you want to start a charter school, you have to have a public hearing, and it's televised citywide on the city television station. So it really gives people a chance to comment on this.
Okay, well, that excellent. I hope we head in that direction. You have mentioned Mayor Michael Coleman, and so let's talk about him and one of his latest appointees. In his State of the City address a few months ago, he announced that he was going to have an education director. Some people like to call this office education czar. And this person was going to serve on his council, but not be a voting member. And I believe this came out of your work, everybody's work with the Columbus Education Commission. You served on that. And so why are cities doing this now? Why are they starting to have this education component as part of their governance? What is this all about now? Is it, you know, why is this right. happening?
So this is a voluntary arrangement, okay? It is the school board is accepting the mayor's education director, which I think is the more appropriate term.
Yes, it is.
And that person, of course, is Rhonda Johnson,
right.
who's led the Columbus Education Association for many years and who has really developed a broad network of supporters. For example, the Columbus Dispatch editorialized very strongly about the fact that she was a good choice for this position.
We're very proud of her.
Well, and the business leaders in the community, like Alex Fisher from the Columbus Partnership, were very very positive about her appointment because I think she's shown herself to be a very knowledgeable person and shown herself to put the interests of children and students and the community at large there. So I think this is a very positive development. The cities that are making progress in terms of education all have strong relationships with their communities and with their mayors and their city council. And Columbus is fortunate. The city council president's a former member of the school board.
Right.
The mayor's personally committed to this. I think this just adds value.
Now, are you familiar with the particular issues that Rhonda will be addressing as education director?
Right. Now, you know, keep in mind the elected members of the school board still have final decision-making
Certainly.
On everything. So this in no way erodes the power of the school board. What it does do is it broadens the knowledge base, and it also makes sure that if the school, for you mentioned need for preschool, the mayor in his budget and council has approved over $5 million for preschool. That's
Wonderful.
Never happened in our city before. And it's not a city program. It's going to be nonprofit organizations that run preschool programs and also that coordinate their work with Columbus City Schools. So I think that's the mayor and city council deserve to be commended for this.
They certainly do, and I'm glad that they've got a great person on board in Rhonda Johnson as the education director. Mark, as always, it's been wonderful having you on the program. You always bring a greater perspective, a more global perspective as to what's happening in our district, and I've always appreciated that. So, again, I want to thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you. Thank you.
This concludes our show. A podcast of this program will soon be available at wcbe.org. Please join me on Teacher Talk the first and third Tuesdays of each month. I also want to thank James Deason, intern from Capital University, for helping to produce this program. This is Sue Miziak wishing you a good night.